son.
Oh.
I at one point owned 4 or 5 cars. Didn't have what I could drive. So.
Yeah. Everybody had them.
Always seemed to be one getting fixed and one thing or another. For a while, when the twins were in high school, I guess until a couple years ago, my wife had a job at, she works for Kaiser, she was at Eastern State Clinic, so she would drop in downtown.
Please read the title of the item in front of us.
You want all three read?
Please.
969,
amend Portland's comprehensive plan map and zoning map for properties along and near the Cully Boulevard Main Street 970, adopt the transportation recommendations contained within the Cully Main Street and Local Street Plan as the strategy for developing the transportation system in the Cully neighborhood. And 971, use the Cully neighborhood as a case study to address the issues of and the proactive strategies related to gentrification and displacement.
So I remember when I was campaigning to be on the Portland City Council, Kathy was kind enough to put together a group to talk to me about the current status of this part of the city. I'm going to refer to it, the plan, as the Cully Commercial Quarter and Local Street Plan, by the way. The word Main Street is actually a copyrighted designation, and so we refer to this as the Cully Main Street. But to avoid Dan Salzman going to jail, we are now calling it the Cully Commercial Quarter and Local Street Plan. So I apologize if that's confusing. It's just the way it is. But I was here in 2003, and this neighborhood was facing many challenges. Despite a great group of people, relatively high home ownership, despite an amazingly active neighborhood association, business district, Hacienda, CDC, a lot of great things going for it. This is a neighborhood that really had not had the adequate attention from the city. So working, and the number one problem identified was Cully and the intersection with Prescott. So working with Mayor Tom Potter, we went to work to focus on getting Cully to be a proper street. And at the same time, soon thereafter, beginning the work of putting together the Cully Commercial Quarter and Local Street Plan. In the intervening time, the City Council also decided to use tax increment financing in an innovative way and to create tax increment districts. And this is a partnership with Jeff Kogan, the chair of Oklahoma County, to create tax increment districts that we call Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative districts that also would provide some longer-term organizing and some longer-term financing, sort of self-directed financing, that as we worked on the Cully Commercial Quarter plan, that there would also be an opportunity for some local resources to make sure that the work to implement it continued. Modest resources, but very important resources and something that we could do given the limited investment tools that we had at the time. This week, just to sort of connect some dots, the City Council also had a work session on the Get Out of the Mud and Dust initiative that would provide financing for much less expensive streets. Many of the sort of more narrow paved streets would become legal for the first time in the city's history. We would maintain them once they were built, and for the first time, we would be offering financing. The sort of traditional street that you see downtown, sort of the neighborhood version of it, is about $300 a month for the average homeowner to pay. And the streets in the city of Portland have mostly been paid for by the adjacent property owners. The streets that Denver and others have been working on through this plan would be about $60 a month. So we've been working on a number of things that actually are a little bit ahead of council consideration of the plan, but we've been very careful to try to knit them together sort of as we go. I'm very impressed with this plan. Your work on this plan has been exemplary. You've had Ms. Bishop, who is one of the city's best, and your work and her collaboration and the work of the Planning and Sustainability Commission really shows. With that, I'd ask staff and Eva, I'd ask staff to come up and make the presentation. I think while they're coming up here, a number of us have some potential amendments, which is also a normal part of
director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. We are very excited to present the Colley Commercial Corridor and Local Street Plan. City staff worked with a very diverse and very engaged group of citizens, of businesses, of community members, and we learned a lot. In a long time that we worked together. We learned about the specific needs and priorities of the people who live and work and in businesses here in Colley. And first and foremost, I think we learned that the focus needs to be on economic development and jobs, and it needs to be on improving streets and building sidewalks. This project is a great example of the Portland Plan in action. It focuses on equity, it focuses on prosperity and affordability, and on creating a healthier and more connected neighborhood. So I just want to say thank you to all of the residents and businesses and community members here that put so much time and effort into working with the city to create a great plan. And I want to introduce Debbie Bishop, our Northeast District Liaison. She'll provide a brief presentation on some of the highlights and some of the key issues in the Colley Plan.
Thank you, Susan. Good evening, Mayor and City Council and the Colley community. I want to glad to be here tonight to present this work to you. And what I would say is that Colley is a neighborhood that wants what other neighborhoods have, which is nearby businesses that meet daily needs and safe and accessible streets and to be able to get places in the neighborhood and outside. Tonight is a result of a year-long planning process. The recommendations you have before you deal with zoning code map changes and a Colley street plan for the neighborhood. As Susan just said, this plan implements the Portland Plan in many ways. It's addressing equity to an underserved and very diverse community, and by doing so and providing a framework for more businesses and economic prosperity, and providing the beginning of improved street system, we're actually connecting people within their neighborhood to be healthier. And we're supporting our youth by giving them services and, again, a better street system to get around their neighborhood. This project implements another two recent City Council adopted initiatives. One is the Colley Concordia Community Action Plan, which had two goal areas that talked about economic prosperity and infrastructure improvements in the Colley Concordia area as being priorities. And the mayor has talked about the Colley Boulevard Alliance, the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative. So here's Colley, and it's a very large neighborhood in the central and northeast part of our city. It was annexed into our city in the 1980s. So I just want to quickly highlight some existing conditions. In general, I said this neighborhood is very diverse. The 2010 census has told us that 58% of the population is white, 21% Hispanic, 16% Black, and 6% Asian Pacific Islander. And I have a little argument going with my East District liaison that I think Colley is the most diverse neighborhood in the city. She thinks in East Portland, so we'll have to figure that one out. The household median income is $8,000 less than the median overall for the city. So we have a range of incomes here and a little bit higher level of poverty. You may have heard in previous presentations on this community that there's a lot of children under the age of 18. One in four households have children under 18 compared to one in five in our city. Through the previous work, we also learned that this neighborhood is woefully deficient in commercial zoning, where only 2% of the land area is zoned commercial compared to about 10% on average for neighborhoods in our city. For the Colley Main Street, which the two photos on the top of the screen are showing another lovely Portland day along the Colley Main Street area, the commercial corridor area. And 75% of the land is zoned residential in this corridor, so we can't meet the goods and service needs It's when you have, for example, a commercial use, but the underlying land is zoned residential. And so you're not really an allowed use. You're there because you previously existed and you're okay to exist, but you can't really expand or fix up your place or change use. That's not allowed because you're zoned residential. So in this corridor, we have something like 18 commercial non-conforming uses and 27 overall. So we were trying through this process also to rectify that situation. Of the uses that we see on Coley Boulevard, there's a lot of auto-oriented or alcoholic beverage establishments. And through the planning work over the years, we've heard a lot from the community saying we want things like bakeries and bookstores and places for kids to gather. And it's really hard to find that on the Boulevard area today. In the bottom two slides, Denver will be sharing with you a lot more on the existing transportation conditions. Thank you. This is the study area for the project. It encompasses the broader outlines for the transportation planning piece of our project, and it covers most of the Coley neighborhood. It incorporates the residential portion of the Coley neighborhood. There's a little more of Coley to the north of Columbia Boulevard. And then the brown area is the commercial corridor study area. And this is just historically is based on a Metro Region 2040 growth concept designation of a main street. We also have one other parcel here, if I can get there. And I think Commissioner Fish would know what that site is. It's called the Worgen property, and that's also included in our study as an opportunity for open space. We held in the last year three major public events where we averaged about 75 people per event. As we have hopefully done tonight, we have childcare and Spanish interpretation. We've had at all the events, and that's been very successful and encouraged participation. We had a project working group that met five times during the course of the project to advise staff on the work that we were doing. And that was made up of community and agency representatives. We also did other outreach with Latino and Somali residents via Hacienda Development, neighborhood and business groups, and the local school PTAs. Okay, the rezoning proposals that are the recommendations that are before you tonight have considered the existing context very carefully, potential opportunities, and community desires. We had a grant from the state to complete some of the planning work, and we hired an architect to do an economic development analysis of the Main Street area. And they gave us ideas about how to best promote the Main Street area, the character of it. And also, we heard pretty broad approval for additional residences along Coley Boulevard area to support future business in the area. And we developed criteria that we used to evaluate the rezoning proposals that was from our working group and endorsed by the public. So here's the overall map. I know it's a little hard to see. We'll show you some smaller area images in a moment. I did want to say that we're looking at 32 acres of rezoning, 8 acres of residential to commercial, 19 acres of residential to residential, and the area, we divided in the full Main Street area into 5 areas with which we'll share with you our proposals. So the first area is Coley Boulevard South, and that's from Failing to the south up to Skidmore. This area has a very much a storefront character right now. Buildings come to the street. And so the zoning proposed tonight reflects that with commercial storefront zoning, Again, it's probably difficult, maybe the commissioners can see, but the public may not be able to see as well, but there's some outlining buildings in blue. Those are all the non-conforming uses that we're trying to correct in this situation. But this is an area where mixed-use opportunities could flourish. Just images of the street today. The second area is the core of, is one of the big activity areas of this Collier Boulevard commercial corridor area. It's what's affectionately known as Five Corners, where you have Prescott running across east-west. Collier Boulevard is on diagonal, and 60th runs north-south. This area today has the Albertsons, it has some auto-oriented uses. There's already some general commercial zoning there, which is a very auto-oriented type of commercial zoning. And so this area, we were trying to create more of a pedestrian-oriented activity area, allow more neighborhood serving uses. Again, there's non-conforming uses in this area, and provide also some longer-term redevelopment priorities, and that in particular is the church property and this triangular area, which could transform over time.
What does the UC stand for?
Urban commercial. So that would, at some point in the future, the property owner could request either commercial storefront or mixed commercial zoning. Here are some images of the core area. So the third area is Collier Boulevard North, and it's an area north of going up to Emerson to the north. It's currently today, it's the area where the Collier Green Street improvement, where you see the bulk of the improvement. And it's a mostly residential area with, again, some non-conforming small commercial uses. And this is a place where we thought an incremental step in additional residential would be appropriate, and also providing a couple small little areas of commercial mixed use, again, where the non-conforming uses are, to support those existing small businesses, but also create some interest along the way between the primary five-corner area and the next area, which I'll share with you. So here's the New Green Street and one of the tiendas along that corridor. The fourth area is another major activity node for this commercial corridor area. It's Killingsworth Street. This area has already apartment buildings and a convenience store. Here is the triangular piece that the community would love to see transform into something more neighborhood serving. I'll leave it at that. trying to be nice. But the residents around this area really feel like this is like their center of their part of Collier. And so it's a real opportunity area where we can, again, try to increase pedestrian-oriented neighborhood serving type uses and provide, more opportunities for the future. There's also a smaller node at 60th and Killingsworth right there also, where there's a little bit of recommendations for changes for today and into the future. A couple images of Killingsworth Street. And then the fifth area is outside the Main Street area, but currently Portland Parks and Rec is working with the community on a master plan for a neighborhood park that will be Collier's first developed neighborhood park in the next couple of years. And we thought while we were in the neighborhood, so to speak, that we would take this opportunity to rezone the City of Portland property that is going to be a park to open space. And there's the site. And it's a few blocks from here. It's very close by. So I'm going to turn the presentation over to my colleague at the Bureau of Transportation, Denver Agarda, who's headed up the transportation work on this project.
Good evening. I'm Denver Agarda. I'm a transportation planner with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And I'm going to go through the transportation recommendations of the plan briefly and then hand hand it back to Debbie. Development of this plan offered a really unique opportunity to integrate the transportation and land use recommendations to address significant issues within Cali. Residents of the neighborhood live within a very close distance of many destinations, and also they're in close proximity to really well-connected parts of the city that have good street connections as well as sidewalks. The Cully Commercial Corridor is situated, it's the middle box there, roughly a mile from both the eastern and western borders of 42nd and 82nd. 82nd, obviously, on the eastern edge. In 2011, construction was completed on Cully Green Street, which is Cully Boulevard down the middle, a model complete street with sidewalks, swales, and cycle tracks, which serves as a spine through the heart of the neighborhood. In addition, there's two neighborhood prosperity initiatives that have been mentioned already, these small rural areas that have been formed on 42nd and along Cully to foster economic development and neighborhood vitality. There are plans to improve parks within the neighborhood, as Debbie mentioned, including Thomas Cully Park, which is shown at the top right corner. Here's the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiatives on Cully 42nd, and you can see there Sandy Boulevard is not that far away from the neighborhood itself. Thomas Cully Park on the northeastern corner, and Sacagawea Julia Park, and the Woodrun property that we just mentioned are also sites that have plans for improvement in the near term. There are two elementary schools that serve the neighborhood children, including Harvest Valley Elementary, which is on the, just south of Prescott, and Ridgeway Elementary, which is where we're having a meeting tonight. So as you can see, there's several community destinations that are not that far from the residents that live within the neighborhood. This is a map that shows the existing sidewalks within the city. The yellow line is our transportation study area. It's also the boundary of the Cully neighborhood, south of Columbia. The street pattern and the native neighborhood are the result of development that occurred prior to the area being brought into the city of Portland. Full annexation of Cully didn't take place until the mid-80s. This is a similar time period of much of East Portland. The neighborhood still suffers from poor street connectivity and a lack of basic infrastructure today. Cully has the second most miles of unpaved streets of all neighborhoods within the city, and the study area has 50 blocks of unpaved right-of-way. You might have noticed a few that are just a few blocks from this school. Only a third of streets within the neighborhood have a sidewalk. That's compared to 90% in the Concordia neighborhood, which is just the other side of 42nd. Limited sidewalk infill has occurred over the past 20 years as a result of both private development and public projects. Often isolated sidewalks are added to one side of the street that offer little benefit for people on foot, stroller, or wheelchair, as shown in the picture at the bottom right-hand corner. The sidewalks that exist in Cully do not offer continuous connections for neighborhoods, for the neighbors to reach their local destinations like parks and schools and transit stops. The local street plan focuses on three areas. First, giving residents more options to get around the neighborhood by defining the primary and most important routes for reaching the schools, parks, and other community destinations on foot, bicycle, or a mobility device. Secondly, by providing more design and implementation options for improving streets that lack basic infrastructure, such as paving or sidewalks, while providing safer and access and mobility. And third, by identifying the area with the highest concentration of gravel streets as a target area to explore opportunities for economies of scale and piloting new local streets. At the start of this project, staff partnered with the Portland Public Schools to develop the Safe Routes to School engineering strategy for the Brickwood Elementary School, working with staff and students and parents and holding several meetings in this very building. The recommendations are shown on the left side of the screen. The green lines are the routes to Brickwood Elementary School. There was an engineering report that already existed for Harvey Scott, and the recommended routes are shown in blue on the east side of the Colley Boulevard. As part of this initiative, we collected quite a lot of traffic analysis on local streets. We determined that more than 70% of the local streets that exist within Colley have less than 500 cars a day. So these streets are really serving primarily the local access for the neighbors that live on those streets. That's 70% of the streets that we counted, and that translates to...
Can you repeat the traffic volume again, just so...
Yeah, so we collected traffic on around 36 local streets, which often we're not counting traffic on these local streets, so we have quite a lot of high concentration of traffic data now to tell us a lot about what local streets are, how they're functioning here at Colley. And that, from what we learned, 70% of the local streets in the Colley neighborhood have less than 500 cars per day, which translates to about a car a minute in the busiest time of the day. These streets, not only are they primarily serving residents and places where people live, but they're also ideal routes for pedestrians and bicycles and the bike way and walkway networks within the neighborhood. The map that I'll show you as soon as this gets started is the pedestrian bicycle networks. And we started with what we have in the city and worked with the residents through our outreach to identify new connections to fill in the gaps within the system. And we're recommending that the bicycle and pedestrian networks that have been identified in this plan are updated with the next transportation system plan update. During the planning process, we heard from residents that they do want to see improvements on the streets. Less than 1 in 10 of those who surveyed said that they had no improvements needed on unpaved streets. However, at the same time, they want to preserve certain aspects of their street that contribute to the livability of their neighborhood. Most notably, it's the traffic speed and volumes on these streets to keep the negative impacts of traffic down. They also want to preserve established trees and spaces for active living. In order to move beyond the one-size-fits-all standard that we have for local streets, new concepts, concept-level options have been identified to improve low-traffic residential streets that better reflect the context and function of specific streets and the neighbors' desires. The aim is to offer more flexibility that will enable improvements to be made which have not occurred to date, as was shown in the slide of connectivity. So the diagrams that I'll show in just a moment are intended to show general layouts of the different options at a planning level. The concepts will be further developed to define actual dimensions, materials, constructions, the maintenance costs, and financing mechanisms with community input as part of the project level implementation, which ties really well into the out-of-the-bed initiative. And there's been a lot of coordination to make sure that the recommendations are. In identifying the new options for residential streets, the focus was on reducing costs and making basic improvements to streets that lack the fundamental roadway elements like paving, walkway, or stormwater features. At one of the public events that we, the last one we had here in this building, 75% of residents said they would rather, they'd like to see part of the street improved sooner if it's too expensive to build the current city standard. On quiet residential streets, the following options that I'll show on the diagrams should be possible based on the current and desired function of each street. So, the top photo shows the base street, or what we're also calling the separated residential street. And this provides for a narrow paved roadway and a walkway. In general, Cully neighborhood has good soil conditions for on-site infiltration of stormwater. Still, there may be cases where stormwater features necessary to allow runoff to infiltrate the source. Simply adding a walkway may be appropriate on unimproved right-of-ways, to provide access to only a few or no adjacent properties, provide access to only a few or no adjacent properties. Adding the walkways might create a critical connection to a school or the destination. When motor vehicle speeds are extremely low, primarily used for accessing homes, it may be possible to improve the streets so that pedestrians and motorists share the same space in the roadway. The bottom right is showing the shared residential street section. In some cases, it may be necessary to provide a higher performing street, such as on routes to popular community destinations like parks. The full street has, shown in the top left, has a traditional configuration with ample space for cars to pass in two directions and off-street parking, street trees on both sides. The half street is commonly the result of a permit requirement with development of the half of the street that the development is on. And the skinny street is a street section that fits within a narrow right-of-way and provides for parking just on one side of the street. The last diagram shows what we call a low-impact street, and it's a new concept, and it's proposed for testing. It has built-in traffic calming features. It provides by providing for a very narrow travel way to slow down traffic and provide parking at an angle off of the roadway, which creates minimal pavement and opportunities for mature trees to be preserved. Based on the analysis of existing conditions, we identified the target area that has more, around 35% of the unimproved streets in the neighborhood, and including five consecutive blocks, this area here. And this happens to also be the area that is north of Prescott, where several students that attend Harvey Scott to the south of Prescott live. The focus area enables the city to address the area with the highest efficiency in terms of unpaved streets and to examine the potential for improving multiple blocks at one time by achieving economies of scale and perhaps a district-wide local improvement district to better handle on the actual costs for specific streets, the potential for creating local jobs or training opportunities, the desires for the neighbors, and their ability to support certain improvements. Finally, as a recap, the transportation component of the plan will allow for greater street connectivity and accessibility in the Cully neighborhood, more focused investment on the most important routes to local destinations, and new, more affordable options for improving quiet residential streets.
I would just like to close in that as this planning project progressed, we heard from community concerns about, you know, people wanting good things to happen in the neighborhood, wanting businesses to come that serve the community, wanting improvements to parks and streets in this neighborhood. But the fear or concern is that property values will increase, and that this again is a diverse neighborhood of incomes and communities of color, that there is some vulnerability in the future of some residents here as these improvements happen. And so Planning and Sustainability Commission endorsed and has recommended in this report to you that Cully be considered as a case study to look proactively at policies and strategies to address gentrification and displacement. And part of this reason is this is a very active neighborhood, as you all know, and there's already great community organizations and stakeholders who are engaged in activities that are intended to minimize gentrification and displacement and support and kind of uplift community members in Cully. And so as part of that, the recommendation also includes compiling key data and monitoring it over time, sharing that with the partners, and adapting strategies over time, developing policies over time that really respond to the conditions out here in Cully as things change in the future. And this is a model that can then be also looked at citywide as we look at this issue in other neighborhoods. So I will close there with just saying that the Planning and Sustainability Commission is asking that you adopt an ordinance that amends the comprehensive plan map and zoning map as shown in the report, adopt a resolution that directs city bureaus to implement the Portland Plan Action 97 related to gentrification and displacement, and adopt a resolution that includes the transportation recommendations for Cully's transportation system. Thank you.
Thank you both. If I could ask a few questions. So there are very few examples in the United States of successful efforts at improving a district without gentrifying it. So my, where instead of folks either being forced to sell because things get overpriced, or it's just tantalizing not to sell, that everybody's economic prosperity improves as the neighborhood improves. I think one of the amendments that I'll be talking about, and I think Alan will be talking about as well, and that was part of the focus of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. How do you hope that this effort is different? Because we don't want Cully to gentrify, we want it to improve, and in the process, improve for the lives of everyone who lives here, and businesses that are here, who might come here. What makes this different that will allow for, do you think, for that innovation in the future?
Well, I would just say I've been impressed with the Cully community in my years of working here. And again, the community stakeholders, the partners, both from the nonprofits and now with the new Cully Boulevard Alliance, I mean, their mission is their vision is all about local people opening up businesses that serve this diverse community. So if everybody continues with, on their path of their mission, and the city is a partner to this activity and we all learn from it and are adaptable over time to the changing conditions, I would want to believe that hopefully it can be different here.
I think part of it also is that Cully has really high home ownership. The people who live in the homes they own, and that's a real different kind of investment than some of the other communities that have changed over time and changed quickly. And I think also by doing some sort of real-time tracking of some key indicators, we'll be able to see, what's really happening quickly and maybe be able to make some adjustments. And I think also just the partnership between housing, parks, transportation, planning, and sustainability, and other bureaus. We've really learned by working in the Portland plan and now in the comp plan about looking at each other in terms of what are you doing, what are you doing, how does this affect the same neighborhood? And I think the NPI's Neighborhood Prosperity Initiatives give us a place to kind of focus that energy. So I think it's a little bit different, and now we have a few more tools than we had in the past.
I think the key will be to fortify the education piece as well. And I, part of the part of the amendment that I'm going to be talking about is in the next couple of months that we also, before the next legislative session, the great thing about working in Coley is this is your first neighborhood plan. And so the fresh eyes that you bring to existing tools that we have, your ideas that might or may not be legal now, but if we go down to the state legislature together, we can make them legal. I think that's a real opportunity for a fresh look at our zoning code and everything else. So.
Mayor, can I jump in on this one, sir?
Please.
It's Nick Fish, Housing Commission. I first wanted to say, Debbie,
that my team, in particular Kate Allen, wanted me to say publicly thank you for your work on this. We talk about strategies to address gentrification displacement, but what you've done is started to focus us on solutions and specific steps that we can take. And Kate has been particularly impressed about the work and the body work you're doing. Let me just comment, though, on something that the question the mayor asked, because we're often asked, what are some of our tools to prevent displacement as gentrification occurs? And gentrification simply means that property values rise, and as they rise, they often displace people. Renters get priced out of the market. People sell their homes or cannot get into homes because prices come up, and it changes the demographics of the community. The positive side of that is you're building wealth for people that actually own homes. People in areas that are growing in value appreciate the fact that their home prices are going up. The problem is you're creating barriers for some people to get in, and those people that don't own, renters, get priced out of the market. One of the strategies that we can use in Culley and Lentz and many other areas where the city's making investments, and therefore we anticipate the growth in value, is upstream to make sure that there's a range of housing choices that are being developed. And that's why we believe so strongly that we have to make those early investments in affordable housing so that people across the income range can afford to live. Now, the critics will say to us, well, aren't you just segregating poverty in doing that? Aren't you just creating segregation? That, I think, completely misses the point of creating complete communities. What we want to do is make sure that the market doesn't dictate the composition of the community exclusively. And we do that by investing upstream. Where we have an urban renewal district, we have the benefit of the 30% set aside for housing. Where we don't have an urban renewal district, we have the benefit of things like tax abatements. The council recently reformed the whole set of tax abatements for the city, making sure they're more accountable and more aligned with our policies. The reality is that is one way that we ensure that at least 20% of the units are affordable to people below 60% of median family income, which means a lot of working class and more middle class people who otherwise could not afford to live in neighborhoods like this. So what I just want to add to this debate is that we do know what some of these tools are, and they are early investments upstream, making sure there's a range of housing choices. Because the homeowners aren't the ones we're worried about. The housing prices could double tomorrow here, and because of property tax limitations, your property taxes will only go up at most 3% a year. So they're not going to get priced out. People will be priced out in terms of coming into the neighborhood, and people who don't own, who are renting, will be displaced because of rising rents. And that's where the city has a role to play in investing upstream to make sure there's a range of housing choices.
Community support the cultural diversity of this neighborhood of Cully. And so we unanimously passed and recommended to you the resolutions and the zoning changes in front of you, because this neighborhood embodies really the Portland plan. When you talk about prosperity to an underserved neighborhood, the zoning changes are a start. They're not a finish, but they're a start to prosperity. And what we heard from the neighborhood, and that you will probably hear again tonight, is how do you bring in, into the issue of gentrification, how do you bring that prosperity to the indigenous people that live here today, that cultural diversity, and how do they take advantage of that prosperity? Yeah, people, prices go up, people sell, they want to get their money and move on and improve their lives, but there's business opportunities here. If you drive that Cully Street, there's business opportunities that could occur and will occur. Hopefully it occurs with people from the neighborhood that serve the neighborhood. That's what we heard. Hopefully the transportation improvements, they will improve the neighborhood. They will improve the streets. Those are great improvements. I have a little bit of history in that because I was part of the Cheap and Skinny back in the day. So, but it's a great way, but that does bring prosperity to neighborhoods. It does change the neighborhood. It does make it more attractive for people to move in. They have good school systems here, and people will move in. Streets are a barrier, but when they see improvements, my experience tells me they move in quickly, and the prices do appreciate it. So I would tell you that the zoning changes, the transportation changes are the right thing. They're a start here. But I think the big thing I would ask that, and what we as a commission were concerned about, is part of that gentrification, and that council be vigilant along with all the partners, because this is a neighborhood that wants to be involved in their decisions down the road. And that U.S. Council understand the data that's going to be coming back to you as part of the resolutions. And we do have tools, but those tools are fresh. And I think we need to bring those tools and look at them after a period of time and say, are they working the way we want them to? And if we need to make changes, be willing to make some of those changes in the future. So as one part of the Plains Sustainability Commission, I recommend that you adopt the zoning changes, the transportation changes, and implement the gentrification tools that are in front of you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the planning commissioners. Unless there's additional council discussion. Michael Denver. Yes, I was just getting to honored guests. Please come forward. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm Michael Denver. I'm the state representative for House District 45. Which starts on Northeast 21st and goes out to Park Rose, through Park Rose, includes Mayor Park, and it includes Cully. Heretofore, Cully has been divided between two districts, two representatives, Tina Kotek to the north and me to the south, our senators Jackie Dinkfelder and Chip Shields. With redistricting, Lou Frederick kind of elbows his way in. And so Cully will have three representatives. The Cully area, first of all, let me say that I wasn't planning to speak, but since you're giving me this opportunity, I just want to thank you for what you're doing with this plan. I think everybody needs to listen. I like what I've heard so far. I particularly like what I've heard about the desire to maintain the character of Cully and to avoid gentrification. And if there's anything that we can do in the legislature that needs to be done statutorily to help with that, I'm sure my colleagues, just speaking for them, and certainly for me, for myself, would be happy to help with that. I've lived not far from Cully for almost 30 years, But to be honest, it wasn't until I first ran for office in 2008 and started knocking on doors that I would say I really discovered Cully and its character. I knocked on virtually every door in the, you know, in the area. And you know, as you probably know, people, when they think of politics, they think of things that are most local to them, or to, about things that are most distant. So at that time, when I asked people what their primary concerns were, what I heard was, or what they wanted me to do if I was elected, A, get us out of the war in Iraq, and B, get rid of the potholes on our streets. And it was a consistent thing that I heard. But I really came to appreciate the district. In fact, when my daughter moved back to town, I encouraged her to move in to college. She lives on 71st and Wygant. Unfortunately, she's been redistricted out of my district, which shows how much clout I have, that the line was drawn right down the middle of the street. You know, another thing that I did discover when I moved in was the high quality of the neighborhood association in Cully. It's been alluded to already. It's always dangerous for a representative to say that a particular association is the best. So if I weren't in public, I would say that. But since I'm in public, I'll say it's one of the best, definitely, in the district. Very engaged citizenry, and I know that they had a lot to do with this plan, and I look forward to working with them and with you to help bring it about. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. All right, we'll go to three folks testifying at a time. I'd ask that you keep it to 2 minutes. If you plan three, then I'll let you do three. But we have found what can be said well in 3 minutes can be said even better in two.
And the first three.
Just a point of order.
Mm-hmm.
You had said,
You had said earlier there might be some amendments.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, should we put the amendments on the table now in advance of testimony so people might have a chance to speak to them, or should we take the testimony first?
I was thinking to do testimony first and then do the amendments.
Well, you're the mayor, but I'm just
raising that question.
The first three, please come on up, are Nathan Teske, Andrew Riley, and Chong Nguyen, and they'll be followed by Howard Kenyon, Helen Grant, and Kathy Fersenow.
Hi, welcome. Go ahead and get started.
My name is Nathan Teske. I'm the Director of Community Economic Development at Hacienda CDC here in the Cully neighborhood. I'll try to speak fast to get everything in 2 minutes. I'd like to thank the mayor and the city council for hosting and convening us in the community. Thanks for that. We appreciate that. Besides working at Hacienda and representing Hacienda, I'm also representing the Living Cully Coalition, which is a partnership with Hacienda, Verde, and Mea, which are all based in the Cully neighborhood and do a lot of work here. Our goal is to create triple bottom line investments in the neighborhood that pencil out economically, but that also achieve social and environmental benefits. As your questions to the city staff reflected, Cully is the most diverse neighborhood in the state of Oregon. And this really is the last stand for the city, I think, in terms of doing, improving a neighborhood, but not gentrifying. And I think Mayor and Commissioner Fisher's question reflected that.